Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for Monday, September 25th. I'm your reader, Mark John Conley. Now let's get started with some local headlines. Our first local news story today has a headline that reads, Stepping Up to the State Level. Pettigrew helps break down language barriers. And there is an editor's note that prefaces this article. It reads, This feature first ran in a special publication called Hometown Pride, published June 24th, 2023, featuring people and organizations from Fort Dodge and the surrounding area who are making a difference in their communities. The article reads, For the past 12 years, Rachel Pettigrew has been serving as the English language learner teacher for the Fort Dodge Community School District. Starting this summer, however, she has taken on a new role at the state level, but with the same goal of helping students, families, and educators overcome any language barriers that may exist. Pettigrew has been working with both high school and middle school students, families, and staff in her role as ELL instructor. In her new role, she is serving as education program consultant for Title III and migrant programs with the Iowa Department of Education. She began training this summer. Her new position allows her to work from home. It's such a cool opportunity, but it's also a little bittersweet, said Pettigrew. My students and I have become like family. I have had such great support from the staff here, but it's such an amazing opportunity. I feel like I will have a much bigger impact. Part of her role will be working with different area education agencies and with school districts to navigate all the things that go into working with ELL students and families. She said she'll serve as a contact point for anyone who needs help dealing with laws, legal documentation, and other paperwork. It's a little bit daunting when you think about all the immigrants coming to Iowa, but there are a lot of great people at the state level that I work with, so I am excited. They can teach me a lot, she said, but I am going to miss my students here. That's the hardest part of walking away from this job. Pettigrew will also serve as a contact point when school districts run into questions about coding or funding or testing within their ELL programs. She'll also help implement professional development for districts and schools centered around ELL training. However, she won't be working directly with students any longer. I feel like I have the skill set for this new position, Pettigrew said. Obviously, I'm going to have to learn a lot over the summer. I feel like I'm going to be able to be an advocate for immigrants and legislative change. We really need someone in that position to advocate for our students, she said. Pettigrew was born and raised in Indianapolis, Indiana. She graduated from the University of Wisconsin at Platteville, and her first and only job was for the Fort Dodge District. Along with serving as the ELL instructor, she also taught a couple semesters of French, which was actually the first foreign language she learned. She's hopeful that the district will be able to find a replacement for her position, because she said it's such a vital part of the school. My role here was a lot different than I expected it to be, she said. I expected to just be a classroom teacher, but it's really being a liaison for students and families and teachers who want the skills to help ELL students succeed in school. Pettigrew said all school districts in Iowa are required by law to have an ELL teacher. Every district should understand that immigrant students aren't just another subgroup. They are such a big part of the future of America, she said. We need to focus our efforts on helping them become successful. Pettigrew said the school district does have one Spanish interpreter, Denitza Cardenas. She works with most of the ELL students and families. Pettigrew also said the world language teachers in the district have been a big help to her over the past 12 years. We've been able to tap into resources we have to help families, from the counseling department to bridges to the food pantry, she said. A lot of times, our immigrant families don't know who to ask for help or what is available. We try to connect those dots, she said. Pettigrew and her husband, Thierry, have two sons. She's excited to be able to spend more time with them while working from home. Our next local news headline reads, A Home for Blue, 10-year-old shelter dog looking for forever family. Meet Blue. With his handsome salt and pepper coat, he's almost home Humane Society of North Central Iowa's most eligible senior bachelor, and he's looking for the perfect home to live out his golden years. Blue is a 10-year-old Australian Shepherd Labrador Retriever mix, and he spent most of his life going in and out of the shelter. He first entered the shelter in 2015 as an owner surrender, when his previous owner was moving and unable to take him along. Over the next 5 years, he's been adopted and then returned to the shelter a few times. Nobody's really taken the time to work with him or really care for him, said Michaela Morgan, a staff member at Almost Home. Shelter staff, who have spent countless hours with Blue, describe him as sweet and playful, but he's not a fan of other animals. As a sometimes grumpy old man, Blue doesn't really have the patience for younger children who may try to climb on him or grab at his furry ears or tail. Blue's most recent admission to Almost Home was in November 2021. Last week, he celebrated his 10th birthday while in the shelter. Staff are hoping that he'll be able to celebrate his next birthday with his family at his forever home. He's kind of iffy towards newer people, said Stan Anderson, a staff member at Almost Home. He loves his space. When it comes to meeting new people, Blue just needs to be given the time and space to warm up to strangers. He needs someone to be patient and to work with him, to get to know him and everything, said staff member Gloria Dupuy. When given that patience and time to warm up, Blue becomes almost like a puppy again and feels right at home. He has no history of behavior issues, Morgan said. Blue is a wonderful dog and loves to cuddle when he's comfortable. He just needs the right home and the right environment. Blue's adoption fee has also already been paid for by a shelter volunteer. Blue isn't the only pet at the pet shelter who, because of their age, breed, or special needs, is having a tough time finding his forever home. An adult Brittany Spaniel hound mix named Dixie has also spent quite some time at Almost Home and is looking for a home with no other pets and no children. Stacy is a 2.5-year-old white domestic shorthair cat, and Murdoch is a 3-year-old tuxedo domestic shorthair, who are both looking for homes where they can be the only pets. Murdoch's been to 3 homes, including his original, said Crystal Wendell, another staff member at the shelter. At the last one, he was not treated the best, and even through all the stuff he's been through, he is still the single, sweetest, most gentle, wonderful guy back there. As of Friday, there were 31 dogs and 130 cats available for adoption at Almost Home. The shelter is also looking for homes to foster kittens when a litter or a pregnant cat are brought in. Anyone interested in adopting Blue, Dixie, Stacy, Murdoch, or any of the other dozens of animals waiting for their forever homes can visit almosthomeiowa.org to fill out an adoption application. Once applications are approved, staff will set up an appointment for a meet and greet with the shelter pets. Approved applications remain on file for 6 months. While not everyone is in a position to be able to adopt an animal from the shelter, there are a myriad of ways to help Almost Home. Daily supply needs include clumping cat litter, liquid laundry soap, lemon floor cleaner, Dawn dish soap, brooms for sweeping, 13-gallon trash bags, paper towels, bleach, and food. Some specialty foods are also needed, like sensitive digestion and skin-dry food for cats. Almost Home also has a special wish list of items, including solid Kong balls, cat toys that can be hung or dangled, interactive cat toys, things that will pop out or pop up and encourage mental stimulation and movement, easily washable cat beds, Nyla bones for dogs of all sizes, and 2 cat grooming bags. The biggest item on the Almost Home wish list, however, is a portable ultrasound machine to help monitor pregnant animals who come into the shelter. "That would be a godsend," Wendell said. "The machine could be used or new, as long as it works well," she said. Another way to help support the shelter is to golf in Putts for Pups, hosted by the Deer Creek Golf Course, on Saturday at 11 a.m. Registration is $15 per person, and all registration fees are donated to Almost Home. Cart rentals are $17. Golfers can pre-register at Deer Creek or sign up on the day of the event. Almost Home is also always welcoming volunteers to help at the shelter. Our next headline reads, "The Language of Dance. Duncombe students learn salsa dancing." In Hispanic culture, dance is a form of language, and on Friday, fourth graders at Duncombe Elementary School learned a bit of that language with a salsa lesson. "Who wants chips and salsa?" Robbie Ron asked the students, who immediately shot their hands up to volunteer. "Well, we don't have any, so we're going to dance salsa," Ron said with a wink. Ron and his mother, Elena Ron, led the students in learning a few basic steps of the Latin dance that is such a huge part of their culture. The two are originally from Ecuador in South America. Robbie's wife, Kirsty, is a first grade special education teacher at Duncombe, and they have a son who attends the school as well. "These are just the first steps of salsa," Robbie Ron said after the lesson. "I'm trying to get them excited about Hispanic culture." The activity was held in honor of National Hispanic Heritage Month, which is celebrated each year from September 15th through October 15th. "It's like a language for us," Robbie Ron said. "It's easy to communicate with people who could have different backgrounds and beliefs when music and dance bring us together." "When you listen to Latin music, you relax," Elena Ron added. Marie Lehman, who teaches the English language learners at Duncombe, spearheaded the planning of Hispanic Heritage Month activities. "This is the first year they've planned events that highlight Hispanic culture for all of the grades. First graders will learn about and make piñatas, while second graders will learn to play the Spanish game Loteria. Third graders will learn about how food fits in with Hispanic culture, and fifth graders will have a quinceañera fashion show and a soccer demonstration. We're just hoping to develop an appreciation for differences and cultures of friends they have in class, Lehman said. We plan to do it for other cultures as well. She said with the growing population of Pacific Islander students, she's planning on celebrating Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month in May. This is the world we live in, and we're going to grow up living and working with people who are different than they are. So to develop an appreciation and comfort with people that are different from them will only benefit them as they grow, Lehman said. Our next local news headline reads, New Growth Alliance CEO is ready to work. Ferris plans to uphold the collaboration. When Astra Ferris moved to Fort Dodge recently, she was immediately impressed by all the things the community has to offer. There are a lot of things to do and a wide range of outdoor recreation opportunities, she said. Those are among the things she plans to tout as she promotes the community in her new role as Chief Executive Officer of the Greater Fort Dodge Growth Alliance. There's a lot of things we take for granted here, she said. We need to collectively tell those stories. Ferris assumed the CEO role on September 5th. She replaced Dennis Plotz, who served in that capacity from the inception of the Growth Alliance in 2011. His retirement ended 48 years of service to the community that began when he was hired as an associate planner for the city of Fort Dodge in 1975. Ferris came to Fort Dodge from Lamar, Missouri, where she was the chief executive officer of the Barton County Chamber of Commerce. She has described economic development as a team sport, adding that the recent successes of Fort Dodge and Webster County are a testament to collaboration. All the hard work is being done on a regular basis collaboratively, she said. One of her major goals in her new role is to uphold the collaboration that is an integral part of achieving our goals. She added that she wants the Alliance to be part of efforts to really strengthen and showcase our community at another level. Doing that will require a collaborative effort, she added. This is not a one-person job, she said. This is not a one-entity job. This is everyone working together to achieve a goal. Currently, the Growth Alliance has 13 potential economic development projects in what staff members call the pipeline. Because companies like to keep their plans under wraps almost until they are ready to break ground, Ferris can't talk about any of the projects. Collectively, however, the projects represent millions of dollars in new investment and hundreds of additional jobs. Ferris may also be presiding over a realignment of the Growth Alliance staff. The Economic Development Director and Communication Director positions are both currently vacant. She is also considering some internal strategic planning. What we do is good, she said. I want it to be great. And then the article includes a brief profile of Ms. Ferris, and it includes some of her previous roles, which were Chief Executive Officer of the Barton County Chamber of Commerce in Lamar, Missouri between 2012 and 2023, as well as various positions at U.S. Bank in Joplin, Missouri from 2006 to 2012. She also served as an executive assistant at Sunrise Media Group in Joplin, Missouri from 2002 to 2006. She has an organizational management certification from the University of Arizona in Tucson and national grant writer certification as well, U.S. Chamber of Commerce Institute of Organizational Management certification, and she is a graduate of Joplin High School in Joplin, Missouri. She's currently enrolled in Western Governors University. Among awards and honors she has received include Joplin Regional Business Journal's Most Influential Woman of the Year in 2016, as well as Joplin Regional Business Journal's 15 Under 40 honoree in 2016, a Next Star Broadcasting Regional Remarkable Woman Award in 2023. And her family includes her husband, Jared, 3 children, 2 dogs, and 1 cat. And now turning to some local business headlines. This one reads, Hair History. Salons operated by Bunker were downtown fixtures. Peggy Bunker, the former owner of Peggy's Plaza Salon and the Hair Receiver Salon, has a neatly filled binder with pictures of the many stylists she's worked with, grand opening ribbon cuttings, and something a lot less colorful but very interesting. The floor plan for a remodeling of Peggy's, which was located in the arcade level of the Warden Plaza, dated 1982. She purchased the salon from Ann Wagner in 1979. Her salon was the source of the famous round staircase still in the remains of the building. It led to an upstairs storage room. We found the stairs in the basement, Bunker said. Bunker has another memory of her many years in the business. This one, framed, is a pen line drawing of her second salon, the Hair Receiver Salon, located in the 1200 block of 2nd Avenue South. My husband Bill got me that, she said, while proudly holding the artwork. It's one of my most precious possessions. Bunker got her start in 1966 when she graduated from Burnell Hairstyling College and got her cosmetology license. She still has the original document in a displayed frame. After graduation, the school's then manager, Bonnie Hammer, hired her to come back and teach. During the 1970s, Bunker worked for various salons in the Fort Dodge area. In 1979, she took the plunge and became a business owner. Her second salon, Hair Receiver Salon, is named after an antique item that she's collected. When people ask about the name of the salon, Bunker said, I tell them about a day I was in an antique shop with my friend Kathy Dressen. Our eyes dropped on what looked like an antique dresser set. One of those was a container with a hole in the center of the lid. The clerk told us it was a hair receiver that women saved their hair in to make hair pieces, Bunker said. We both said it would be a neat name for a salon. Her collection of hair receivers was displayed in the front room of the salon. The house the hair receiver was built in was built in 1890. She purchased it from a Dr. Musselman. His office occupied the first floor. The upstairs was an apartment. During the remodeling, the windows were all replaced, except the front window, which had the original stained glass in it, she said. When possible, we tried to preserve the ageless beauty of the home. The apartment became a space for several tanning beds and a break room for her stylists. In January, Bunker put her scissors on the shelf for the one last time, selling the business to Abby Loffersweiler, her husband Luke, as well as Mark and Susan Loffersweiler. Abby Loffersweiler had worked at the salon as a stylist since 2008. Bill and Peggy were kind enough to consider her as a possible next owner of the salon, Luke Loffersweiler said. They will carry on the tradition of excellence and serve in the salon that began years ago with Peggy and Bill Bunker. Bunker looks back on all the years with not only a smile on her face, but gratitude as well. I want to thank everyone who worked at our salons over the years, also our loyal customers who followed us over the years and kept us going, Bunker said. You made a dream become a reality. And turning to today's editorial section is this headline. Soybeans are big business in Iowa. This crop helps make the Hawkeye State prosperous. Nobody knows exactly how long humans have cultivated the soybean, but agricultural historians seem quite certain its domestication as a crop in China dates back 3 millennia. There are actually Chinese records documenting soybean growth as far back as the 11th century. There is some disagreement about who first introduced soybeans into North America, but researchers seem to agree that by the 1760s, soybean seed had reached Georgia. Whatever the origin, few would dispute that in the 21st century, soybean cultivation is important to the world as a food source and a great deal more. Food, health products, biodiesel, and printer ink are among the more important uses of this versatile bean. As just one example, the Messenger uses color soy ink to print every issue. Iowa ranks number 2 in soybean production among the states, second only to Illinois. In 2022, Iowa farmers harvested 587 million bushels of soybeans, amounting to 14.2% of the nation's total supply. The Iowa Soybean Association estimates that soybean farmers contribute about $11.5 billion to the Hawkeye state's economy each year. The sale of soybeans grown in Iowa to foreign clients is a major positive contribution by our state to the U.S. trade picture. In that regard, Iowa's commercial relationship with China is a huge asset. China imports more Iowa soybeans than all other countries combined. Nearly 1 out of every 5 people who inhabit this planet lives in China. The long-term importance of selling soybeans to that market is enormous. Iowa's renewable fuels industry has great potential. Soybean farmers are of vital importance to the biodiesel segment of that evolving economic sector. Iowa's status as a leader in soybean growth has positioned it to be at the very heart of biodiesel production. According to the Iowa Renewable Fuels Association, Iowa's 11 biodiesel plants produced 349 million gallons of the fuel in 2022, making the state the top producer. And you are listening to the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for Monday, September 25th on IRIS, Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. First, we remember James Brooks Gargano, and the dateline is St. George, Utah. James Brooks Gargano passed away Sunday, September 10th, peacefully in his sleep. He was born April 6, 1941, in Fort Dodge, to Nina Ruth Tudor Brooks and Frank James Gargano. James was raised in Fort Dodge and Colville, graduating from Fort Dodge High School in 1959 and Graceland University in 1964 with his bachelor's degree. James was a dual athlete at Graceland, playing football and competing in track and field. He served as an officer in the U.S. Air Force from December 1964 to May 1969, obtaining an honorable discharge with the rank of captain. In 1974, he was the AAU National Olympic Powerlifting Champion in the super heavyweight class. In 1999, he retired from a 30-year career in the U.S. Postal Service. In his youth, Jim Rays broke and enjoyed riding his horses. James' passion was sports and family, and loved nothing more than coaching, and eventually watching his sons, grandchildren, and extended family and friends play any sport. If he wasn't watching sports, he was playing cards. He had a heart of pure gold, was extremely humble, and lived a selfless life, putting all others before himself. His parents and stepfather Lowell Eldon Tudor, preceded him in death. He is survived by his children, Jonathan of Tampa, Florida, and Michael of Washington, Utah, as well as grandchildren Valerie, Myla, Sienna, Azy, and Tayson, and brother Roy Tudor of Madison, Wisconsin. A celebration of life service will be held on Saturday, September 30th at 10:30 a.m. at the Community of Christ Church, located at 23886 Boys Street in Fort Dodge. Interment will take place at 2:30 p.m. at Graceland Cemetery, located at 1000 Ohio Street in Webster City, with military honors conducted by the Webster City American Legion Post number 191 and the U.S. Air Force Honor Guard. In lieu of flowers, due to his love of animals, donations can be made to the Humane Society of Utah at utahhumane.org. Local arrangements are with the historic Bruce Funeral Home of Fort Dodge. Online condolences may be left for the family at brucesfuneralhome.com. Next, we remember Lillian M. Wheat. Lillian M. Wheat, age 75, of Fort Dodge, was called home Thursday, September 21st, at Trinity Regional Medical Center with her family by her side. Funeral services will be at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, September 30th, in the chapel of Laufersweiler Funeral Home. Burial will follow in North Lawn Cemetery. A visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday at the funeral home. Lillian is survived by her daughter, Andrea Naylor Outlaw, and son, Juan Naylor, as well as many grandchildren, a host of nieces and nephews, stepsons, stepdaughters, and special friends, Nita Jones of Des Moines and Rosie Clayton of Clinton. Lillian was preceded in death by her parents, John J. and Calvinia Dantzler Wheat, her daughter, Michelle Williams, sister Danny Wheat, brother Woodrow Wheat, and infant brother, as well as nephews and Nicholas Wheat and Wade Wheat, grandson Edward Jace Brown, and stepdaughter Shamora Johnson. Lillian May Wheat was born on December 29, 1947, in Meridian, Mississippi. She moved to Fort Dodge in 1953 with her family and has lived here ever since. Lillian graduated from Fort Dodge Senior High School in 1966 and later took a nursing assistant course. She worked for the Fort Dodge School System, Iowa Beef, Globe Union, and at Friendship Haven. She retired from 2N at Trinity Regional Medical Center in 2011. Lillian enjoyed doing crossword puzzles and snuggling with the babies. She could be found watching Matlock and Walker, Texas Ranger. She also enjoyed watching game shows and westerns. Lillian did whatever it took to make a person smile. She always called and kept in touch with close friends. She was a member of a gay church and the Iowa Caregivers Association. She was deeply loved and will be missed by so many. The family would like to express thank yous to the staff of the Trinity Regional Medical Center Emergency Room and the Unity Point Ambulance crew, as well as the nurses of the ICU and staff on 2 North for their friendship, kindness, and care of Lillian. Memorials may be left to the discretion of the family. Next, we remember Denzel Davis. Denzel Davis, age 80, of Fort Dodge, died September 15th at Bethany Life in Story City. Funeral services will be held at 2:30 p.m. Saturday, September 30th at Gunderson Funeral Chapel. Visitation will be held from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. Friday, September 29th at Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services. Denzel B. Davis, son of Beryl and Darlene Hollingshead Davis, was born October 27, 1942, in Hildreth, Nebraska. He graduated from Hastings High School in 1960. Denzel married Judith Bennett on June 8, 1963, in Eggert, Nebraska. The couple lived in various Nebraska towns before moving to Fort Dodge in 1978. Denzel worked for Dawes Laboratories and other feed mills. Denzel enjoyed watching sports, was a fan of the ISU Cyclones, Chicago Cubs, and NASCAR racing. He liked to play cribbage and spend time with his family. Those left to cherish his memory are his wife of 60 years, Judith Davis, his children, Larray Hecker of Moorhead, Minnesota, Maria Draper and Nancy Rassau, all of Fort Dodge, as well as 8 grandchildren and 16 great-grandchildren, his brothers Ronald Davis and Rick Davis, all of Hastings, Nebraska. He was preceded in death by his parents, his infant son, Denny J., and sister-in-law, Patricia Davis. Next, we remember Patricia Benkendorf. Patricia Benkendorf, or Pat as she was known, age 73, of Algona, died Thursday, September 21st at the Kossuth Regional Health Center in Algona. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday, September 28th at Trinity Lutheran Church in Algona. Visitation will be held on Thursday from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at the Trinity Lutheran Church prior to services. Burial will be in the Luverne Township Cemetery. Pat is survived by her husband, Robert, or Bob as he is known, Benkendorf of Algona, as well as sons Alan of Algona and Curtis of Grimes, and grandchildren Gage, Chase, and Emma Benkendorf. Memorials can be made in her name to Hospice of the Heartland or Kossuth County Cancer Support Foundation. Oak Crest Funeral Services is in charge of arrangements. Next, we remember Vicki Joanne Mischke. Vicki Joanne Mischke, age 74, passed away peacefully, surrounded by her family on Thursday, September 21st, at St. Luke's Hospital in Sioux City, following a short illness. A visitation will be from 4 to 8 p.m. Monday, or today, September 25th, at Zion Lutheran Church in Gowrie. Private family services will be held at Zion Lutheran Church. Burial will follow in Gowrie Township Cemetery. Palmer Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Vicki was born April 27, 1949 in Fort Dodge. She was the second of 5 children born to Harold and Betty Payne Hinch. She graduated from Fort Dodge Senior High School in 1967. On September 19, 1970, Vicki was united in marriage to the love of her life, Daryl Mischke, at Zion Lutheran Church in Gowrie. Together, they had 3 children, Rob Mischke of Fort Dodge, Rachel Martins of Bondurant, and Angie Jepson of Farnhamville. Also left to cherish her memory are her sister, Connie Trusty, brother Mark Hinch, and sister Pam Scharf, and aunt Arlene Hinch. Many nieces and nephews also adored Aunt Vic. She was preceded in death by her parents and brother Scott, whom we have no doubt she is currently sharing a beer with. Memorials may be left to the family's discretion. Next, we remember Gloria Chapman. A celebration of life for Gloria, or Glory as she was known, will be held at 11 a.m. September 27th. At the Ewing Funeral Home in Clarion. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to services on Wednesday evening at the funeral home. Next, we remember Malcolm Hendry. Malcolm, or Cal as he was known, Hendry, age 84, died Saturday, September 23rd at Friendship Haven. Graveside services will be at Calvary Cemetery in Pocahontas at a later date. Bruce's funeral home is in charge of arrangements. Next, we remember Tyler Schmer Pritchard. A celebration of life will be from 3 to 8 p.m. Friday, September 29th at Williams Dingman Family Funeral Home in Sauk Rapids, Minnesota, for Tyler Dean Schmer Pritchard, age 35, who passed away Tuesday, September 19th. Tyler was born April 7, 1988, in Fort Dodge, to William and Kim Schmer Pritchard. He was raised in Iowa, graduated from Southeast Webster High School, and moved to Minnesota in 2012. Tyler met Danielle Zimmerman in February of 2017, and they have been together ever since. He worked as an RN at Augusta Apartments in Minneapolis, was a paramedic for Gold Cross for 12 years, and was an instructor, paramedic, and ICU nurse. Tyler was a member of St. Cloud Fraternal Order of Eagles Airy 622. He enjoyed NASCAR, stock car racing, and racing ATVs. Tyler had a great sense of humor and liked everyone. He was a wonderful significant other, son, dad, brother, and uncle. He was intelligent, loving, kind, and caring. Survivors include his significant other, Danielle Zimmerman of St. Cloud, Minnesota, children Tucker, Gabrielle, and Ezekiel, father Bill of Boxholm, sister Desiree Pritchard of Omaha, and nephews William, Ethan, and Aaron, and cousin Jake Schmier of Fort Dodge. He was preceded in death by his mom, Kim Schmier Pritchard, and uncle Cam Schmier. In lieu of flowers, memorials are preferred. Obituary, guestbook, and video tributes are available online at williamsdingman.com. Next, we remember Roger C. Baitke. Roger C. Baitke, age 67 of Fort Dodge, died Wednesday, September 20th at his home. Memorial services will be held at 2 p.m. today, Monday, September 25th, at Prairie Lakes Church, located at 200 Avenue O, with Reverend Nathan Lawrence officiating. There will be a gathering of family and friends from 12 to 2 p.m. at the church. Interment will take place at North Lawn Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to the family. Arrangements are with Historic Bruce Funeral Home of Fort Dodge. To view the complete obituary and leave online condolences for the family, please visit brucesfuneralhome.com. Next, we remember Edith F. Balls. Born March 31, 1928, Edith passed away in Peoria, Arizona on July 31, 2023, and is preceded in death by her husband of almost 74 years, William H. Balls, in 2019. She is survived by two sons, Daryl and Dale, as well as a daughter, Dawn Walters, and three grandchildren and three great-grandchildren. Visit RegencyMortuary.com for a complete obituary. Next, we remember Ruby L. Cudrell. Celebration of Life Gathering for Ruby L. Cudrell will be held today, Monday, September 25th, from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. at Ewing Funeral Home, located at 1801 Central Avenue East in Clarion. Next, we remember Jane Albee. Jane E. Albee, age 58 of Fort Dodge, passed away Wednesday, September 20th at her home. A celebration of life will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, September 26th in the chapel of Laufersweiler Funeral Home. A time of sharing thoughts and stories will begin at 7 p.m. Jane is survived by her spouse, Chris Key, daughter Kylie Comrie of Harcourt, as well as granddaughters Peyton and Tatum Comrie, stepdaughter Tiffany Lennon of Otho, and her beloved dog Coco. She was preceded in death by her parents, Dennis and Carolee Anderson Vinson. Jane Elizabeth Vinson was born September 5th, 1965, in Fort Dodge. She attended area schools and graduated from Fort Dodge Senior High. Jane was united in marriage to Alan Albee, and their daughter Kylie was born. The couple later divorced. She was a paraeducator at Butler Elementary School for many years, and she delivered parts for O'Reilly Auto. Jane was queen of the snacks. Everywhere you went, you surely wouldn't be hungry, whether it was Oreo cookies at 3 a.m. or a random Twizzler in your face. She had you covered. She enjoyed thrifting with her daughter, Kylie, and her granddaughters were her life. She was an avid Iowa Hawkeye football and basketball fan and color coordinated her outfits to prove it. One minute it was black and gold for the Hawkeyes, and the next it was red and yellow for the Kansas City Chiefs. She was dressed appropriately for every function. Jane had the most genuine heart. She would give anything to anyone who needed it. She will be deeply missed by all who knew and loved her. Jane requested everyone wear their Iowa Hawkeye gear. Memorials may be left to the family's discretion. And finally today, we remember Perry Slaku. Funeral services for Perry will be at 10:30 a.m. today, Monday, September 25th, at Faith United Methodist Church in Humboldt. Visitation is from 4 to 6 p.m. Yesterday, Sunday, at the Mason Linhart Funeral and Cremation Services in Humboldt. And now turning to local sports headlines, we have this one. Tritons take care of business on the road, and the dateline is Glen Ellyn, Illinois. The fourth-ranked Iowa Central football team went into their bye week with an impressive 41-14 victory over College of DuPage. The Tritons have now won two straight since a loss to number one Hutchison, outsourcing Ellsworth and DuPage by a combined point differential of 103-27. DuPage is the top-ranked Division III junior college team and has won each of the past two national championships. It was all Iowa Central from the opening kickoff, as the Tritons scored touchdowns on their first four possessions of the game to take a 28-0 lead into the half. Adriel Fussell had a pair of second-quarter touchdown runs, with both Justin Silverstein and Mario Saunders rushing in touchdowns. On the first series of the game, Silverstein directed a 12-play, 75-yard drive that took up almost 6 minutes, resulting in an 8-yard touchdown run for the quarterback. The second possession consisted of 9 plays and covered 75 yards. The third went 90 yards over 14 plays, and the fourth was 10 plays over 60 yards. Tavis Malloy caught a 64-yard touchdown pass from Trevon Taylor, and Marcel Cutright added a fourth-quarter touchdown run. Iowa Central will now wait to hit the field again until Saturday, October 7th, when they host Coffeyville for homecoming at Dodger Stadium. Kickoff is set for 7 p.m. The Red Ravens, ranked 7th in the preseason poll, are 0-4 and play Ellsworth this coming weekend. Our next local sports headline reads, Frustrations Mount. Dennison Schleswig reigns on Dodgers homecoming parade. The sting of a close homecoming loss tends to linger past the night of the actual football game. Fort Dodge must now prove it can move on and forward from a frustrating 15-12 setback against Dennison Schleswig. The Monarchs gained the upper hand with a go-ahead touchdown early in the third quarter and made it last, grinding out a road victory in the Class 4A District 1 opener for both teams. A disappointed Dodger locker room sat in silence afterward, as all of the emotions from a long and festive week came crashing down with a disappointing Friday night finale. "We're at a crossroads now to a certain extent," Coach Mosier said. "This is the true test of a program. How do you respond when things aren't going your way? It's a tough pill to swallow. I've been around homecoming games my whole life. When you win, you feel like you're on top of the world. When you lose, it can make for a really long weekend. But you have to show you have the maturity and leadership to not let adversity leak into making bad decisions away from the field or letting it fracture the rest of your season. That's where we are at now. This isn't fun for any of us, but it is what it is, and we have to get back to work and get a lot of things cleaned up. We didn't do enough right things in practice or last night to earn a win. That's just the bottom line, he said. Fort Dodge, who was 2-3 overall, managed just 239 total yards of offense, with 105, a 62-yard pass from Royce Peterson to Ty Adams, and a 43-yard sprint to pay dirt by Drishawn Ross, coming on the Dodgers' two touchdowns. The other 40 plays from scrimmage went for an average of just 3.4 yards per snap. Dennis and Schleswig, who are 3-2 overall, wasn't fancy or particularly sharp, but every time the Monarchs needed a stop on defense or a pivotal conversion on offense, they seemed to just do that. Five different backs combined to rush for an effective 237 yards on 49 carries, and Dennis and Schleswig kept the chains moving, with 18 first downs to Fort Dodge's 7. It hurts, and it should, Mosier said. We had some opportunities. We had our chances. You always do in a 3-point game, but I really don't think, given how things went, we are in any position to do anything other than look in the mirror and take collective responsibility for not being physically or mentally where we needed to be. The Dodgers turned the ball over on downs twice and had three empty second half possessions after Ross darted up the middle for a go-ahead score early in the third quarter. From Ross's touchdown on over the final 23 plus minutes of the contest, Fort Dodge managed only 53 offensive yards. The Monarchs drained the clock and salted away the win with a methodical 12-play, 45-yard drive to end it. The possession, which in a way typified the entire night, wasn't flashy and didn't result in any points, but it got the job done. Dennison Schleswig ran 30 times in the second half alone. Only three of those rushes went for more than 9 yards. But the Monarchs kept the sticks moving slowly but surely and made their tenuous 3-point lead stick. Ross had 104 yards on 20 carries. Junior Gavin Peterson and senior Isaiah Caldwell recorded sacks, and senior Zeke Pineda recovered a fumble with Adams. Sophomore Noah Daniel and senior Drew Moritz both blocked extra points for Fort Dodge, which lost senior co-captain Grant Williams to an injury late in the first half. Williams did not return and had his arm in a sling on the sidelines for the rest of the night. Fort Dodge returns to action on Friday at Storm Lake. The Tornadoes, who are 3-2 and 1-0, top Sioux City West on Thursday, 28-19. And that concludes today's reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for Monday, September 25th. I'm your reader, Mark John Conley. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening, and make it a great Monday.